change? How do we measure it? The anniversary of the Bible? No, just the printing. But it's a big one. This is Father Voskin. I'm a priest of the Armenian Church. We'll be connecting the dots between those as well as Jethro Tull. How about that? In this episode, episode number 437, and we're inviting you to take the next step with us right now.
This is Susie from In His Shoes, welcoming you to our ninth year of broadcasting The Next Step. The next step is a step, a stride, moving us forward. Here, Father Voskin provides his unique and distinctive voice for Armenian Orthodoxy, giving an intelligent and practical answer to the challenges of life, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by Jesus Christ. It's a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. The next steps are serious, fun, informative, and most of all relevant, as religion should be. So get ready. We're taking the next step.
350 is the number for today. 350. Do you know what one of the hang-ups is of Protestantism? Well, this goes back to American Protestantism, to Western Protestantism, to Armenian, Eastern Protestantism, if there is such a thing. But the hang-up has basically been that the Bible, Holy Scripture, has not been accessible to the masses. And I remember this when I was first ordained a priest, because back then we had a lot of people that were still left over after the Armenian Genocide, that had gone to villages, and many times, not just one or two, many times I'd have a lot of older people bring me documents for me to translate. And I thought this was very weird at the beginning, but as I saw more and more of these cases, I started to understand that the church had a unique place where it was basically the priest who was the learned man who knew how to read, at the very basic, knew how to read, and he turned things accessible. And so one of the complaints towards the formal institutional church, let's say in the West, the Roman Catholic Church, was, by the Protestant Reformation, was that Scripture was not accessible, that they did not encourage Scripture in the hands of the people. And certainly in the case of Armenian Orthodoxy, Armenian Church, this was the complaint back in the 1800s when the Armenian Evangelical Movement began. Interesting. 350. You know what that is? Now, those of you who have been listening to Next Step know that I'm not a real one for these kind of celebrations. But guess what? We are celebrating the 350th anniversary of the printing of the Armenian Bible. In 1666, the first Armenian Bible was printed. Now you say, okay, well, so what? That's a shame. No, think about it this way. Why was it printed? So that Holy Scripture could be in the hands of the masses. Really? Yeah. So that Holy Scripture, the Bible, could be in the hands of the people. That's why you print it, right? If you need it just for the church, well, you can find a scribe. You can find one or two scribes that'll sit there and they'll write it. That's what they used to do. But the urgency to have that Holy Scripture in the hands of the masses. And so we are celebrating this year the 350th anniversary of the printing of the Armenian Bible. And I've got to tell you that I, for one, was one of those people that I said, hey, so what? You know, it's a printing. There's a lot of things. But the more I thought about it, the implications of that are that the Armenian church wanted to have the Bible in the hands of the people. That's the thought that we start off with today. How are you doing? I hope you're doing well. We're going to be talking all kinds of stuff about having information in the hands of people. We take it for granted, don't we, huh? That right now everything is accessible. You know, we're talking, I shared with you last week that we're organizing a conference called Embracing Our Faith in a Changing World. And as this week has gone by and I've started to put down the preliminary ideas, remember, mark it on your calendars, 3-3-3. 3 days on the third month, beginning on the third day, March 3rd, 2017. 3 day conference in Burbank, California, Los Angeles, California. Mark it on your calendars. You're going to want to be there. Do anything you can. You need to fly out there, buy, steal, cheat, do whatever it takes. Get a ticket and come out, okay? So we're going to be in Southern California doing this conference, Embracing Faith in a Changing World. Well, when you think about what is that faith, well, we want to define it as our faith. Obviously, we're doing the conference. You want to make sure that it's something that we believe in. But think about the other side of that, in a changing world. And the more I thought about it, yeah, for somebody like me, or somebody my age, that change is phenomenal, drastic. Since I was a kid to today, that change for somebody who is a teenager today, that change isn't that noticeable, right? Think about it. Basically, there's an equation to be had in this, right? There's a proportionality. Change is relative to the person who's experiencing it. It's directly proportional to the amount of time by which it is measured. How's that? There you go. Change is directly proportional. The idea of how much change you've gone through, directly proportional to the amount of time by which it is measured. Ah, that works. Think about it for a moment, okay? I remember as a kid, TV, we had a black and white set. I remember when color TV came out, not everybody could have it. A friend of ours had it, and when we'd go to their house, we'd watch color TV. That was a big deal. That was really, really a big deal. Here was another wild idea. I remember this specifically because I looked for slots in my TV. I had heard that in a few years, television would not be free. You see, because when we were kids, we had what was called rabbit ears. No, not us. The TVs had rabbit ears. And they were just antennas. Antennas that you stuck right on top of the television set. And it would grab signals. And it would be interpreted by your television. And you'd watch television. That's what we understood as television. Yeah, this is like early 60s. What is that? 50 years. 50 years ago, right? So you've got these rabbit ears. And what was, so let's see, I think television came out in the mid 40s. So this is like 15 years into the invention of television. Okay. We'd get signals via antenna. And somewhere along the way, somebody said that there's going to be pay TV. Now in my head, as a young kid, I remember specifically thinking like, this is going to be odd. Like, how are they going to, because in my head, how could you pay for it? The only means by which you could mechanically pay for it would have been if there was such a device as, let's say, a parking meter, where you could slip coins into it. And just as you would park for an hour by putting, at that time, who knows what it was, a few pennies. Who knows what it was? I just parked downtown today, downtown LA. It was like almost a dollar, I think, the meter for 15 minutes or something. Anyway, for pennies you could park, I would imagine. My parents would let me put that coin in there. So I was familiar with that. And I thought, wow, television. Pay-per-view television. Probably it's going to have some kind of gadget like that where you slip coins in there. Now, fast forward 50 years and pay-per-view, if you're going to watch anything on television, of course it's pay-per-view because you're either going to get it from a satellite signal, from a cable, that's coming into your house. Or, of course, if you're like me, I still got antenna going up because we happen to live right under Mount Wilson where they broadcast a lot of these and we're just content with digital signals that we pick up. So anyway, let's not confuse the issue, but you know what I mean. If you want to watch television right now, there is that concept of pay-per-view, and it's not by a parking meter where you slip coins into it that your TV operates, but it's by credit card, and you don't even think about it. You put a credit card on file, and the company just extracts the money regularly, and so you have uninterrupted service. Now, think about the change from the early days of television, and go somebody, say, 20, 30 years before me, who watched television evolve from radio. So you understand that in that span of, let's say, between 50 to 80 years from today, people who lived in that period would have experienced such a difference, just in terms of television, okay? Then in comparison to, say, somebody who was born in the year 2000. Basically had flat screens all his life, enjoyed uninterrupted television where you watch and you flick and you have the DVR capabilities that you can freeze. Freeze television as it's happening and watch it later. Yeah, that's right. The early days, you didn't have that. Anyway, the point is, in terms of television, in terms of this concept of television, something very drastic from the 1950s to 2016 today, okay? A lot of other things. Primarily, I would say, in technology, because technology right now is just advanced. So think about telephones. I always think about that. Right now, we had a conference call the other night. It didn't cost us a thing. We just went on Skype, and we were meeting with people throughout the world. I mean, remember the old days? No, you don't. Little kids, young kids don't remember days where it was measured how far you spoke to people, just right in your own city. There were zones. So it wasn't enough that you had local. You could call somebody across the street. But then if you wanted to call somebody 5-10 minutes away from you, there were zones. You had to pay for it. Long distance, you had to connect with it. Okay, these are technological. They think so. Think about, this morning I got a call from the bank. Actually, it was the church account. Somebody has made charges on our church account at Starbucks. $25, $50, and $75, but it started off with a charge of $1. So that tipped off the bank. They sent us a letter. They gave us a call. I got a call from our bookkeeper that, did you make these charges? No, we didn't. Okay. So they stopped it. Now think about that for a moment, right? The letter, subsequently, the letter came to me from Bank of America. That's who held the credit card and said, you know, we will issue you a new card and expect to get it in 4 to 6 days. We don't think about it. Somebody out there made some false charges. What was that? Bank robbery, right? I didn't pay for it. The bank's going to end up having to pay for it. Think about that for a moment. Used to be, if you wanted to rob a bank, you'd have to go into a bank. You'd have to use weapons. You'd have to be armed. You'd have to put people down. You'd have to have a getaway car. You'd have to have a bag to fill up the money in. Right now, from the comfort of your home, somebody sat there this morning and robbed a bank to the tune of $25, $50, $75. Let me do it, $150, $151. And he got away with it. Or she got away with it, right? Anonymous. It happens. It's a change. A change. Today, you don't think twice about it. People just sit there and it's just part of the system. Okay, those changes, a changing world. Directly proportional to the amount of time by which that change is going to be measured. So for younger people embracing our faith in a changing world, some people may question it. What's changing about it? And certainly because by virtue of when you were born, in relation to the today by which you're measuring that, that change is relative, right? Relative to who you are, where you were born, what time you were born, and how you perceive it. Many, many, many factors, right? So you got to be careful when we're talking about change. embracing our faith in a changing world. Is it possible that someone would say, hey, it's not changing, or I haven't noticed much change? Right? That word is a relative term. Relative to the person. Much change? Little change? No change? Yeah. I would imagine, you know, somebody born today, right this moment. And now, 3 seconds later, somebody puts a microphone in that person's mouth and says, hey, has anything changed? Well, not much. I could say that, you know, a few moments ago I was very comfortable. Now I'm breathing on my own. But other than that, my world around me, it's basically the same world. I was secure and comfortable next to Mom. Anyway, you get the idea, right? We're being silly over here. I'm going to take a break right now. We're going to see how all that change, how all this plays into the world situations, because we're going to be talking about something heavy duty. It kind of affects all of us. Truth. Coming up right after the song of the day. You like that? A little bit different for you today.
Yeah, of course.
Avo Chaglazian playing the Armenian dhol. Dhol is, it's a drum, goes underneath your arm. Actually, I've seen it played between the knees as well. Rather large, slapped, played with the hands. And I've been a fan of the dhol for many years. Seen it when we were kids. There was all kinds of Armenian orchestras and Armenian bands. My dad used to play with a band that had a dhol player. Not too many dhol players back in those days. Yeah, we've been talking about old days. So anyway, I wanted you to just hear it. It's off of an album. I think it's called Art of the Armenian Dhol by Avo Chaglazian. Definitely there'll be a link on today's show notes. But we know what's fun about things like this, where it's just rhythm, basically. Take a listen to it and adapt the song to it. For instance, on this same album, there is Adam Khachaturian's Saber Dance. And I wanted this particular one. It's more improvisational. It gives you an idea of like different dimensions, different techniques that the player used. But listen to a song, say, for instance, Adam Khachaturian's Saber Dance, played on the dhol. And you listen to it, and now you're able to use your imagination. It stirs up so many feelings. It's really wild what a little beat can do in your life. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed it. A little something different. Arminyan Dahol on this fine October day.
Clear. Could be a budding stately hero. International competition in a year. She was a good enough reason for a party.
Well, Ken, let the music wind out a little bit longer than usual. Can you guess why? Yeah, we had a chance to hear Jethro Tull. The rock opera. I was going to say soap opera. The rock opera, Jethro Tull. Ian Anderson presenting Jethro Tull, the rock opera. Just last week, we had a chance to see it at the Pantages Theater. And actually kind of like very surrealistic, because yesterday I was in Santa Barbara and I passed this really cool theater, the Arlington Theater, and then I see it up on the marquee over there. Actually, check out the show notes. It's a really cool picture I took. I'll make sure that I put it up. Let me make a little note. Okay, the Arlington Theater. So the big marquee that says Jethro Tull up there. Got a chance to see it, but here's what was fascinating about it. And a big thanks to my sister Amish for getting us these tickets. Pantages Theater, if you ever get down to Los Angeles, it's worth going into that theater. It is a classic little place. So here's a group that I got attached to back in 1969. Okay? They had formed in 1968, and I got on the bandwagon just a year after that, 1969, from a dear friend who turned me on to this music. I was a little guy. Yeah, I was young, but impressionable. I was just turning a teenager at that time. Impressionable. And what a choice did I make. I found a band that, you know, 45 years later is still creating. Still creating. And that's what was really fascinating going to this concert. Because here you see Ian Anderson in later life. He's pushing almost 70. And in later life, recreating and finding new expressions for his work. And that to me is the creative spirit gone wild, right? Unleashed. And that's what it's about. It's really being able to create, not stop creating. You go to a lot of bands and, you know, especially some of these old ones, and they'll play a bunch of old stuff that you have. But to be able to create new stuff, new creations of the spirit, that is, if not equal to the past, but even beyond it. I mean, some of the complexities found in the music. And of course, there's always the usual stuff that brings in the usual fare. People are following along for the usual songs that you hear. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, it takes you back a while. But why not? There's always place for nostalgia. But also along hand in hand is this ability to create, to stimulate others through the creation of this art. And you think about it for a moment, right? Art form, whether it's something drawn, something painted, or in this case, something created through melodies and words. And when you talk about words, it's mind-blowing too, you know? I sometimes just sit there and you think about the words that he's using. Even simple ones. Think about this phrase. I was thinking about it the other day at the concert. From ear to ear. Right? And he smiles from ear to ear. From ear to ear. To where? To your other ear. From ear to ear, H-E-A-R. Oh, what? I mean, there's so many dimensions to it. Anyway, I'm playing with you because I get a real kick out of this. It's a mind stimulation as much as anything else. And to watch Ian Anderson get up there and put together this opera where he went through the life of Jethro Tull, who happens to be an agriculturist. Now, yeah, if you don't know, I'll go through it really quickly. There is no such person Jethro Tull inside the Jethro Tull band. Jethro Tull was a name that they adopted back in the late 60s for a variety of reasons. That has its story, too. But here's the thing. You check out who Jethro Tull was. Well, in agricultural world back in, I think, the 1700s, he developed some kind of system that made agriculture, that made planting so much easier. So this was a rock opera about Jethro Tull, that person, using the music of Jethro Tull, the group, intermixed with a lot of new stuff, new melodies, new words, new songs. I don't know. I got to tell you, to me, sitting there, of course, a big fan, but at the same time, it's this touch of God at that moment. You know, what is that touch of God? We are created in His image when we say that. What is that supposed to mean? You know, to me, it's always meant that we have that ability to create as well. That creative energy is inside each and every one of us. To be able to touch others with our art, with our words, with our movements, our dance, our music, and why not with our hands? With our souls, with our spirits, touching people. And here's a musician that some 40, 50 years later is still touching people. Yours truly included in that mix. With his melodies, with his mind-stimulating lyrics, and just a lot of fun. Anyway, thank you, Mr. Anderson, for a wonderful concert. And turn on to it. I'll put a link to the Jethro Tull website. If you can, after all these years, get into some really good stuff.
Let me bring you songs from the woods to make you feel much better than you could know.
Better than you could
dust
know.
Dust you down from tip to toe.
Dust you down from tip to toe.
Show you how the garden grows.
Show you how the garden
Hold
grows.
Hold you steady as you go.
Hold steady as you
Join
go.
The chorus if you can. It'll make of you an honest man. Let me bring you love from the fields. Poppies red and roses filled with summer rain to heal the wound and still the pain.
This week has really, really been filled with all kinds of stuff that I've been doing, and I've got tons of notes of stuff that I wanted to share with you. Talked a little bit about change at the beginning. I went into Tull about recreating. Now I want to tie it all together with some stuff that is really confusing, including to me, confusing to many, many people. I would say most of the United States, the population here, and that's the election coming up. And I promise I'm not going to be talking about politics, but rather talking about some phenomena that you see. And the phenomena, of course, that is most striking, that this election is like no election that has ever taken place before, in that you have two candidates from two different parties who really nobody likes. And so it's turned out to be an election not for the person, but rather an anti-vote. So by voting for one because you do not like the other one even more than the one. This is kind of an interesting phenomena in itself. And we're doing a lot of reading lately. We're seeing it and struggling with the self, struggling with your conscience. Like, how could you justify voting for one person when you don't like the things that this person stands for or does? How could you vote for this person only on the grounds that it is an anti-vote for the opponent? Is that enough? I don't know. I struggle with that. I don't think it is enough. I don't think it's fair. I don't think we're voting our conscience at that point. We're voting for people because we don't want somebody else to get in. And the sad reality is with a country this big, 300 million people in America, sadly, the reality is that a very small fraction actually get out there and vote. Because if you look at that 3 million or 350 million, whatever the number is, how many are eligible to vote of that eligible group? How many register? How many really care about it? And then you come down the lines and you have two parties that are separating the people too. So the small group, a very small minority of people, end up electing the president. That being said, at the end of it, there is something to be said that the transition of power that we'll see in January is phenomenal too. That no other country in the world has this type of change or transition of power in such a peaceful manner. Now, what I'd like to share with you and make it the rest of today's podcast is a little, a few thoughts about the truthfulness of these candidates. Now you say, well, can candidates be truthful? I suppose some can. I think for the most part, I think just to be able to sell their bill of goods, there has to be a bit of showmanship. There has to be a bit of salesmanship. There has to be a bit of lying too, right? Okay, you don't want me to call it lying. It's called stretching the truth. There has to be that in there, right? Am I correct? Does it have to be in there? Well, it seems like we've come to expect it. You've come to expect that there's going to be an element of mistruth. Because by virtue of, look at all these, after each one of these speeches, each one of these tweets that go out, each one of these debates is followed up with what? Fact checkers. Got to check up on the facts. Who's been telling the truth? Who hasn't been telling the truth? Now you're looking, okay, how are you gonna connect the dots with what you were talking about? Think about the change. Think about the change we've come to expect. If you have just been born in this millennium, right? If you've been born after the year 2000, you've had 16 years of this kind of stuff, right? You come to expect it. Now think about somebody who's lived 50, 60, 70, 80 years, right? You have the likes of a Roosevelt, of a Truman, of an Eisenhower, of a Kennedy, Johnson. Move it up a little bit forward. The likes of, I mean, presidencies like the Reagan administration. And now all of a sudden you've got this guy named Trump. You've got this woman named Clinton. And they're out there, okay, fact checked. Let's check the facts. And so we do. Here, let me read you something that comes out of Time magazine this week, okay? Alan Thiel likes to stay informed. Okay, if you think today is going to be about politics only, definitely hang in there with me right now, because we're going to connect this right with what you like to tune into this show for, okay? Alan Thiel likes to stay informed. That's how he knows that President Barack Obama is a foreign-born Muslim who cheated his way into the presidency in order to promote a globalist utopia. This is Time magazine this week, October 17. A retired factory worker and born-again Christian, he waits on the floor of the Greenville, North Carolina Convention Center for Donald Trump to take the stage, holding up his phone so others can see the latest headline he had just read. Obama announces plans for a third-term presidential run. The story is not true, but right now, at this moment, Thiel believes it. Just as he believes that climate change is a hoax, that Islam is being promoted in American schools, and that the government has been bought out by drug cartels. He says that people aren't being taught history anymore, and they've dumbed everyone down. As the campaign soundtrack roars and their energy builds, he offers a version of American history that cannot be found in the historical record. Our country has never had any problems for the last 200 years, he says, shaking his head. We've never had a problem with guns or racism until the last 8 years. It's not me saying this. This is Time Magazine, okay? Reporter right there. North Carolina, they're at a convention. Now, I will put a link to the article. Do check it out. Talks a lot about the people and Donald Trump's. But here's what I want to share with you. Can you change this man's mind otherwise by giving him the facts? Now, do you see where I'm going with this? What we're noticing, the phenomena that we're noticing, that this has turned into almost... It's turned into this religious fanaticism in terms of politics. There's groups of people who believe all kinds of stuff. And if you think that this is just made up, I've ran into people. Yesterday, I was with a lady who completely believes that Hillary Clinton's position is to allow Muslims to come in and become the dominant religion of America by virtue of the fact that Hillary is selling or has received contributions from Saudi Arabia. I met a priest, Armenian priest, who has a newsletter, put out a newsletter, who believes that there is a concerted effort by the Obama administration to mix genders to the point that, hey, he warns you, your children, your young kids in elementary school will be going into unisex bathrooms, and watch out because the janitor, who's this older man that's standing there, has the right to come into that bathroom, into that girl's bathroom, because it is now unisex. You're going, what? Who thinks of these things? And they're talking about these things out publicly as if it was fact. And so we have fact checkers. We have things like Snopes, right? To dismiss the rumors. Check it out. Find out the information. Now, how does this all fit in? Well, think about religion too. Think about the fanaticism that goes with religion. And what we're seeing, the phenomena that we're seeing all around us, is we're seeing people react to politics in the same fanaticism that we've seen only in religious circles in the past. For instance, if somebody believes as a Christian, can you really move them away from that faith? Somebody is a Muslim. Do you really think that you could sit there and reason with them and talk to them and say, well, you need to adopt some other plan? Can you go up to a Jew and say, you know, wait a minute, let me share with you some stories and I'll prove to you how you have to submit and become a different faith, let's say. Well, yes, there are some isolated stories, but for the most part, people believe what they believe. People believe what they believe. And you can't change people's minds. Think about the entire resurrection story. Jesus was crucified, died, buried, and he resurrected. Now, you either believe this or you don't. Some of us believe this, no matter what. Even if tomorrow they went into Jerusalem and an excavation discovered the bones, proof positive, carbon dating, whatever you have, they proof positive, these are the bones of Jesus. We did DNA analysis and we traced it back down from King David, blah, 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 blah. And we came down to find out that this is Jesus Christ's bones. He did not resurrect. Here are his bones. Okay, there's going to be certain people. They will say, see, we found it. But those aren't the people who believe in that, right? Some of us will just say, okay, it doesn't really matter. You could say whatever you do. Nothing's going to shake me from this faith, okay? You may believe that, but I don't. And that's just what it is. A couple weeks now, we've been posting, since the beginning of the year, we've been doing the AC 101. For the last several years, I've been producing videos and they're up on the internet. It's always interesting, right? you'll get people reacting. Well, this latest series, AC 101, we get people's reactions firsthand on there immediately. People are arguing with you. This is not what it... Hey, folks, this is what my belief is. This is what the Armenian Church believes. Now, nobody's forcing you. You don't need to believe in this. You don't need to believe in this. But guess what? I believe in it. So what are you arguing with me about? Do you really think your words are going to change my mind? How many people's minds can be changed? Well, unfortunately, there's people who don't have the system. Now, these are not the people who believe. These are people who are fluctuating out there too. And yeah, okay, they're out there. And these are people who are wandering and searching and they're looking for answers. Those people you can touch. But for the religious, the people who are grounded in there, just like the fanatic that you're seeing at this Trump rally that I just described, Time Magazine just described, this is the truth. There's a plan now, right now. Obama's a Muslim and he's bringing in more Muslims. That's what this man believes. Now, can you change his mind with facts? I don't know. That's what I'm throwing out at you today. Because when we talk about embracing our faith, it's based on a given set of constants, not variables, constants. In other words, these basic truths. And you can't really go beyond, you can't bend those truths. Like for me, I believe that Jesus Christ died, was buried, rose again. Now, I can't play with that. Now, do I want everyone to believe the way I believe? Yeah, ideally, I guess so. But is it a reality? I can't make that a reality. The only thing I can do is make sure that it works in my life. And I know that those conditions, the actual resurrection of Jesus Christ, have played into my faith in a very personal level, and it has its ramifications in the work that I do. And so too in everybody of faith. There are a certain group of constants of facts for them, and they are facts for them in their lives, people of faith. They believe it, and you're not going to change their mind. So get over it and worry about what comes next. And that's where I want to leave you today, of all places, with an atheist who talks about Atheism 2.0, in other words, the next step in atheism. Very, very interesting. This is an interview that appeared in, let's see, he's interviewing Alain de Botton on Atheism 2.0. And this is, I want to share this with you because, in a sense, it's almost like what we talk about in Armadoxy, that there are a certain number of givens that you have to accept. And based on that foundation, now let's move on and put it into practical application. And basically, this person, author, philosopher, and founder of the School of Life, London-based institute devoted to developing emotional intelligence through the help of culture. Okay, so one person says through religion, through the help of God, through the help of culture. And let me just read you a couple of quotes, and I will put the link. I'm not excited about this guy, but I just thought that the parallels were so much, it gave us something to think about. He's basically saying that let's move on from the discussion of does God exist. For him, it doesn't. For me, it does. For another, it doesn't. For another, it does. Okay? Can we move beyond that discussion and talk about, well, 2.0? Very, very interesting. He said, the underlying ambition of religion is impressive to me, he says. They are trying to locate the tenets of a good life, of a wise life, of a kind life. They are interrogating the greatest themes. And so I'm attracted to the aspects of religion that know that human life is quite difficult and that we are going to need a lot of assistance, a lot of guidance. And what religious life is trying to do is to provide us with tools for how to keep being the best version of ourselves. As I often say, I disagree with almost every vision of what the best self is, according to religions. But I admire the ambition and the structure that religions place upon this ambition. The interviewer asks, "You seem very interested in altering the terms of the conversation, or perhaps in redirecting it in a productive way. For example, you've coined the term atheism 2.0. What does that mean?" Baton, it's to distinguish it from the modern incarnation of atheism, which was promulgated by people like Richard Dawkins and Christopher Hitchens, that really made the central aspect of atheism the question of whether one did or didn't believe. And I suppose I'm interested in the kind of atheism that starts with the assumption that, of course, God doesn't exist. We made him up. That's fine. Now let's move the conversation forward and look at questions like, what can religions teach us and provoke us with today? And in a sense, when I read this, I'm thinking, okay, yeah, obviously, okay, he's an atheist. Let's get over that fact. What is he saying? Can we reverse the roles? Can we reverse the story on this man now? And say that, yeah, wow. Isn't that what we're doing through Armadoxy? Basically, we believe that Jesus died and rose. We believe in a God. We believe in this creator of the universe. Okay, now, that's a given. Now, what do we bring to the table of life? What do we have to offer? Well, because he died and rose, we should be talking about sacrifice. We should be talking about giving. We should be talking about exchanging, about acceptance. Because he looked down from the cross and he said, "Forgive them," we should start forgiving. Because he gave us the ultimate example of love, we should be loving. And so in a sense, I'm looking at this story about atheism 2.0 and realizing that this is what we've been talking about for the last 9 years through the next step. It's the next step after Christianity 101. And I've shared with you our videos that are out there, AC 101. You'll notice that all of my videos, everything that I do, I'm very proud of and I put up, except I don't post anything from AC 101. I let the diocese do it, and maybe that's why they go viral, maybe because I don't. Oh, geez. Now you got me thinking. Maybe it's because I'm not endorsing them. But to me, that's not the discussion. The AC 101 is, that's the basics. That's the Sunday school lesson for the day. That's something you need to learn. You can't believe how many people. I get stopped on the streets now where people, predominantly because I'm in the area, there's so many Armenians. People stop me and they say, "Hey, we saw your video. We saw what you said and everything." We didn't know that. I mean, you read some of the comments. One touching comment, a lady had written that she had grown up in the Soviet Union, never had an opportunity to learn these things. And so for the first time, she's learning these things. So there definitely is a place for AC 101, for Christianity 101. But at some point, if we're going to be talking about the next step, we have to be at Armenian Christianity or AC 2.0 or AC 202, 203. In other words, the higher level of understanding what faith means. It's not just about swinging the smoke. It's not about just lighting candles. It's not just about making the sign of the cross. It's not just about knowing the history, first Christian nation, or the Armenian Bible being printed 350 years ago, but knowing that there was an intention for that Bible to be printed 350 years ago, because the message had to get out to the people. And the message is not about the individuals as much as it is about the love that they shared in this world. Can we do that? I think that's what our challenge is. That's what comes up when I look at the election process this year. Yeah, it's a very difficult situation to be standing there and realizing that these candidates are far from what you want them to be. And now you realize that you as an individual have to be truthful to your conscience. How do you vote? At some point, do you do the protest vote and not say anything? And is that right? Is that being truthful with yourself? These are the things that I'm being challenged with. This is what I'm walking this next step with you about. Because I know that I'm not alone. I know that people are struggling with this. Everywhere that I turn, people are struggling. Many people are boisterous. They're talking about it. They're out there. Many people are turning inward. And they're looking and saying, where do we go from here? With a world that has changed beyond our recognition, what is my answer? What is the way that I respond to that world? I'm going to take a break right now. Let Susie make her announcement. I promise we're going to be coming back to this theme in the next couple weeks. I hope you're with me on it, because we're talking about a lot of stuff that I know people are anxious about. We lose sleep over it. We're not happy with what it is, and we shouldn't be at this point. But I do believe that there are answers that are talking to us. We'll come back to this, okay? Here's Susie.
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. We are now in the ninth year of producing shows which are heard around the globe. Since 2008, we've provided quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazgen calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. Please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Thanks for listening and God bless. We now return to this week's next step with Father Vazgen.
Well, thank you, Susie, for that announcement. And yes, you can go now, okay? Yes, permission granted. She's been chomping at the bits, trying to get out of here in time, finishing up her work. You know, we keep her in this dungeonous atmosphere over here next to Ken. Anyway, she is out. Enjoy. Yeah, she just waves today, okay, as she takes off to, I believe it was Universal, she said. She's going, it's her one day a year that she gets out there and has some fun. Anyway, I hope you are having fun with us over here on Next Step every week. And one solid way that you could show your appreciation is through your donations. Easy to do. Go on the InHisShoes website and press on the donate button. And even more important, I'm going to be really honest with you, more important than your financial help, tell people about it. Get the links out. If this speaks to you, please let others know about it as well. Share your ideas with us. Drop us a line. You can do so at feedback@epostle.net. And I got to tell you about epostle. It's a really interesting word. It's apostle with an E. It's apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanding universe. And you're part of that. When you become a member with us, when you become a donor with us, you become a member. You become a person who's saying that this ministry, as well as all the other things that we're doing out there, is important. So think about it seriously. Give it a lot of prayer and pray for us as well. Pray for all of us that put this together every week to get a new voice out there. I'm going to call it a day today. We've gone a little bit too long, and I hope you got the gist of where I'm going with all of this. It's not really about politics, but about the situation, about this changing world we're in, and how to embrace our faith in that changing world. Do remember, March 3rd, 2017, we are having a 3-day conference, and we want you to be there. It's going to be in Burbank, California, an opportunity to meet all of us, but at the same time to really expand your horizons. Something really beautiful in understanding how we can embrace our faith in this changing world. It's awakening, it's revitalizing. And I just now, as I'm talking, I got the commercial. They just sent me a commercial. I haven't even seen it. So if it's good, which I'm sure it will be, we'll make sure that there'll be a link on today's show notes along with the website for that conference. just coming up right now, so don't expect too much. There'll be more in the next few weeks. Finally, this Sunday, I'm going to be out at the Rancho Mirage Armenian Church. I believe it's called St. Garabed. Yes, St. Garabed Armenian Church, Rancho Mirage. I look forward to seeing you if you're out there in the desert. Listen, for the wonderful crew who put today's show together, for Susie, our producer, Ken, our engineer, this is Father Bosca inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print. The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Top visits.